Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm delighted to be here once again with you. I have with me my co-host, Shirley Carter. Shirley, are you there?
Good evening, everyone. I hope everyone is keeping warm. I am freezing here. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, I was about to say before I brought you on, there's a chill in the air. We're here in South Florida, and it's like 65 degrees right now. And for me, that is freezing, being from New York City, raised in 10, 15, and 20-degree weather. And I came here to South Florida because I just couldn't do that snow and that chill to the bone anymore. But Shirley, I understand you experienced it there in Michigan.
Yes, it is now currently about 12 degrees, so it is freezing.
Oh, my, you can have all of that. You can have all of that. Well, we have a very exciting show tonight, but before we get started, I want to remind everyone to go to my website, fromthesoulofawoman.com. Therefore, you will be able to find some of my books, From the Soul of a Woman, Love Shouldn't Hurt, Unveiling Secrets from the Heart, Restored Vessels, and my latest release, Unlimited Possibilities, Walking in Purpose. Yes, it's time for us to really get it together. It's almost the end of 2014, and I know there's a lot of things that are undone that we started out saying the beginning of the year that we were going to do, and we haven't quite done it yet. Right, Shirley?
That's right. But we're working on it.
Got to keep moving, regardless of what it looks like, feel like, or act like. We got to keep it moving. Les Brown will be conducting a training December 5th and 6th in Orlando, Florida. And actually, the whole First Family and Motivation will be there. You'll have the opportunity of meeting Calvin Brown, Ona Brown, John Leslie Brown, Serena Brown, Travis, Patrick Brown. And I believe Samaya may be coming too, Rounded. They are the First Family of Motivation. You could go to lesbrown.com to find out more information. And also, you can call 1-800-733-4226 or 954-724-0900 for more information regarding the Les Brown training. It's entitled, I Have to Speak. Yes, I have to speak. So if you want further information, as I said, you can give us a call, and we'd be more than happy to answer any questions or get you signed up. It is the last training for the year for Mr. Les Brown. Now we have a special guest with us, Tametria Harris, who is an entrepreneur, business professional, singer, songwriter, and poet. Tametria, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening.
Hello, my dear. I'm telling you, I'm excited about the show. We were talking last week about the show. I had the opportunity of meeting you at Soul Retreat 2014, and I tell you, you were just such an amazing individual. I said, we have got to get you on the show because we were like kindred spirits.
Thank you so much for such kind words. I really appreciate that.
Yes, well, I just don't say anything. I really mean it. So I do honor you and respect you. And, I mean, some of the things we were talking about, it was like that synergy was just so explosive. And, you know, we've all come from somewhere. We've all been places, and we've had to survive many obstacles and many situations in life. And I was like, well, what should we talk about? And I said, you know, rising from the ashes. You know, a lot of times we have to fight and claw our way through situations, especially being a woman, especially having children, especially trying to maintain a career. You know, ashes are, when you're rising from ashes, it means that they're remnants or debris from something that once was. We start out as being something, and then because life takes a toll, life starts swinging at us, then we find ourselves in a situation where it's like we're in a fiery furnace being consumed.
Absolutely.
But then the Lord just speaks and blow, and then we emerge. Now, you're a business professional and entrepreneur. Tell us how it is and how was it, you know, rising up from the obstacles you've had to face in life.
Well, I'm going to try to be brief. I can be long-winded, but I know we don't have all day and all night. But I started my career fairly young, I would say. My professional career, I was in my early 20s, and I started at a university shortly after I got out of college. And then I immediately enrolled into graduate school and was working towards my master's. I then got married, and a month and a half later, boom, I had a special one coming. And I'm like, what happened? It was so not in my plans to get pregnant so soon after getting married. And just through my whole career desire and path, off kilter. So here I am trying to juggle all these new things at one time. And I wind up switching my professions and going into another position with the county and putting my own business on the back burner and getting that launched and started. And I'm juggling all these different things at one time. And I find myself at this stage in my life trying to manage school, manage being a new wife, manage being a mother, and in the career environment, and feeling like I am married and single at the same time, because it felt like the whole world was just on my shoulders and I had to manage it all by myself. Mm-hmm. And it's not a very good place to be when you find yourself having to make all the decisions by yourself and trying to make sure the decisions that you make are positive ones and not going to cause you to have other issues coming up in your life that are not favorable for you. And in my quest to secure my career, I came to learn some things about myself. And one of the things that I came to learn was this need for validation. And I think that oftentimes myself and others don't realize just how much we are looking to others to validate us because we're not secure in who we are. I've always been told, oh, you're so beautiful, you're so smart, you're so all these wonderful things. But I wasn't confident in me in those things. So I was looking outside to get that validation, and I started to be so honed in my profession and trying to strike a balance and really wasn't doing very good at that because I was spending more time trying to build this career for myself, that things started to just fall apart. And before I knew it, the whole weight of the world, as I saw, was on my shoulders. I wasn't being able to be the parent that I should be or be the wife that I should be or even the professional that I desired to be because I was trying to please everyone except me. So at the end of the day, it came, here I am in my early 20s, being taken out on a stretcher from my place of employment.
Wow.
Literally. And it was a wake-up call for me. Because I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I killing myself for these people? You know, and I'm certain that I'm not the only one that have had those types of challenges in their life because you're trying to do so much, like you got to conquer the world all in a day, and you don't. This is a journey. You don't have to be all to everyone at any given moment. There has to come a time in your life where you take a step back and you prioritize. And it was at that time in my life that I had a wake-up call, and I had to start to prioritize. And for a period of time, I made some adjustments that were healthy and that were working favorably for me. But, you know, life don't just stop one time. You don't get just one battle. There's always more on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Then came child number two. Now I'm too deep. You know, a few years go by and she thinks she's getting it all together and what have you, and here come pitter-patter number two coming along, and you're like, oh my gosh, now the demands have grown in my career because I've been able to move up, first sideways, then down, then up, and I'm trying to juggle once again. And the very thing that I thought I had conquered, I was faced with again, trying to balance my life, trying to make the right decisions. You know, I'm the one making sure everybody get where they need to go. I've never known it. I don't advocate this at all, so don't nobody try this. But I used to be able to drive a stick shift, braid my hair, and feed my child all at the same time. I don't know how
I did it.
Oh, no,
that's not good.
I never had an accident, thank God. I know it's not good, and I'm not advocating that. But I used to do it faithfully every day. I was doing that, combing my hair in the car, putting on makeup, braiding my hair, got a bottle in the baby's mouth, because at that time, I don't want to date myself, but there weren't airbags in the front of the car, so you could actually have your car seat up in the front seat.
Mm-hmm.
So that just goes to show how you can have yourself stretched so thin that you're doing things that are truly can be detrimental,
right,
to yourself. But nevertheless, you know, here I was again with child number two and trying to navigate my life and balance it, and I fell short again. And I had to take another step back and get myself regrouped. And then I'm going to fast forward where life seems to be manageable, and I'm still functioning as what I consider to be married and single, because I feel like I'm doing it all by myself. And, you know, a number of years have gone by, and now I am several years older, put it mildly, and I end up having to have surgery. And it ends up being a surgery that I actually didn't. I had been so lethargic, and I just could not find out what was wrong. I went to a myriad of doctors repeatedly, and no one could find out what the cause was that was causing me to be like I was, extremely lethargic, and my extremities extremely cold. It would be 80-something degrees outside, and I have the heater on. Now, that seems crazy living in Miami, that you have the heater on and it's 80 degrees outside.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I got two different opinions, one from a doctor that I had been with since my son was born, and then a new doctor that my primary care had suggested I go to. And at that time, I went ahead and deferred to the doctor that I was most familiar with, because they both had very different ideas as to what it was and how I should go about resolving this issue. It is to say, I get this surgery, and in the course of the surgery, the doctor make a couple mistakes. One, he inadvertently cut my bladder open, and two, in the process of suturing my bladder, sutured my ureter, which later I come to find out is backed up because I'm feeling myself dying. I'm getting progressively worse. I've been discharged. And just like if you break a bone for the first time, you've never had a broken bone, but something in you tells you your bone is broken, and you just know it.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I was dying. I didn't know what was going wrong, but I knew that something was grossly wrong. And I had to will myself and pray to get my own self out of bed, drive my daughter to school, and drive myself to my doctor, my primary doctor, which wind up having me go straight into the hospital again for another surgery because my kidney was about to rupture in my body. Now, I am due in my on my job. I'm expecting to be back any time now. And I'm due to be on a selection committee. And if anyone is familiar with this process, it's a very, very lengthy process, and you never want to have to shift and change your selection committee members because you have been involved usually for many months in, it could even be a year down the road before you're finally at a place of negotiation. And if you have to change someone, it really, really sets a timetable back significantly. And the day that I'm due there, I'm actually getting wheeled into surgery for the second time in hopes of saving my kidney, my left
wow.
kidney. And nothing
so you
but
were
God
going
was able
through,
to get me there.
So you were going through a lot of pain at that time. You had your baby. So where was your husband? Were you together or not together?
No, we were together. He at the time that I was, took myself to the doctor, he was at the house. He did not think that I was as bad off as I said I was. So
oh.
I took myself to the hospital. I mean, to my doctor.
Okay.
And my doctor wound up getting me to the hospital for the second surgery. And then I wound up having a third surgery. And in between these surgeries, my father, who's an entrepreneur himself, well, was, he's deceased now, was in Mexico fighting for his life, battling cancer. And I couldn't even go see him because here I am battling for my own life. Mm-hmm. And it was in a matter of months from my surgery, not even, my third surgery was in September, and September or October, early October, and then I had to fly to Hawaii, not even healed, on prayers to see my father 2 days before he passed in early November. And before I could even recoup from that, my grandmother, who helped raise me, passed away half a year later. So I was just overwhelmed, to say the least, with grief and health issues and all sorts of things going awry in my life that I, being the charismatic person that I am and very personable and outgoing and helpful to everyone, now find myself in a great time of need. And I withdrew myself from practically everyone. And one of the adverse effects in doing that was my health getting even worse because I was so depressed. And I was trying to mask it to the world so no one knew just how bad things really were with me. And my mother and I are extremely close. But I wasn't even opening up to her to let her know just how bad things really were with me. I think my daughter had a clue because she and I are extremely close and she's just so in tune to me. But yet and still, this was probably one of the darkest places that I had ever been in my life because
how
of
your
the gravity of these things. My children, or at this point in time, were teenagers.
Okay.
We fast forward significantly. This was just a few years ago that this happened. 2011 is when my father passed. Mid-2012
okay.
was when my grandmother passed away, and I was just in a really, really dark place, and I was very angry, and I was angry at a lot of people, including God. Now, I had what I consider to be a very strong relationship with God over the years, and I found it being strained, not because God changed, but I changed. And I was angry, and that anger turned to bitterness and resentment, not just for things that weren't right that I felt should go a certain way, and he just didn't seem to answer the way that I wanted him to answer. But for people that I was counting on to be there for me in a certain capacity, and they weren't. You know, but there's always a lesson to be learned. And it's because of who I innately am that allowed me to finally get to a place where I could talk about it, and I started to heal. But it was a long journey. I'm going to say a good 2.5 or more years that I was on this journey trying to get my footing again. And I think that so many of us, instead of leaning on someone when we really need to, because we're so used to being the one that everybody's leaning on,
mm-hmm.
that I know for me, that was definitely true for me, that I was that person that everyone comes to, whether they need a shoulder to cry on, an ear to listen to, some counseling, you name it. And I can imagine, Valerie, you are being the type of person that you are and the services that you provide as a life coach, know what it's like when you feel the weight of everyone else's issues on your shoulder. It's like you're a receptacle. And you start out, you know, light as a feather, and by the time you finish getting everyone's stuff on you, you can barely stand up straight, if at all. And then there comes your time of need, and there's really no one there, at least so you think. There's no one that's to help you.
Yeah, one of the things you said was that you felt you were angry, and because you felt that people abandoned you, that they didn't live up to the expectations that you thought being who you were.
Correct. And I can expound on that a bit. I was very angry. And I was angry, like I said, too, because I felt that, and I want to say that this is something similar to a number of people, that when you have lived a certain way, straight-laced, if you will, that there's this expectation that you have that, you know, God is going to just do X, Y, and Z as soon as you call upon him. And that's not reasonable expectations, but, you know, when you're in that space, you think that. You don't come, being a child of God doesn't mean you come without, it comes with no issues and no life challenges or what have you. So here I am faced with this challenge, and I just didn't feel God came through like I needed him to, the way that I needed him to, when I needed him to. And I felt the same way about certain people in my life that's in my inner circle, including immediate family, that just didn't step up to the plate. And I was very angry with them for not doing that. Did I articulate that to them? Some, yes. Others, no. I just ostracized myself, if you will, from them and all of my support group. And then I started gaining weight because I was emotionally eating. And now, not only am I dealing with my health issues, my emotional issues, my spiritual issues, now I've complicated my life by adding all this excessive weight, you know, that I put on, and I've never been this large in my entire life. And now I'm even embarrassed to be around anybody. Now, granted, I still feel I was always cute now. I never think I lost my cuteness. But I did think I was excessively heavy. I became, she has a pretty face. That's when you know you're too big. So, you know, at any rate, I like to try to add a little humor here and there. That just complicated matters all the more. So now I'm faced with all these battles, some of which I brought on myself that I didn't have to have in my world. And my health is still not where it needs to be. You know, I have never been to so many doctor's appointments in my life, and I got to have a credit card or two, you know, registered at the pharmacy because I'm there so often. And literally, I don't know if you're familiar or any of the listeners are familiar with the Publix bags, little plastic bags. But that whole bag was filled with bottles of pills that I were on. And I'm a young woman. I'm not, you know, I'm a young woman.
Now, so, were the pills because of your condition or because of depression or what were the pills for?
No, I wasn't on any antidepressants. They were all medicines that were prescribed by my physician to combat the medical issues that I was dealing with as a result of the surgeries going awry and, you know, trying to get my kidney back healthy. And one of the tests that you have to measure the functionality of the kidney requires iodine. And I am highly allergic to iodine, that it can actually kill me. So, but I have to have these tests. So how do you combat that? So I ended up in the hospital two or three more times because of the effects of the iodine, even though I would have 2 to 3 days worth of preparation of medications and what do you call those, allergy medicines and IV Benadryls and all kinds of things. Everything that they could do, they did. And even still, before they could finish the test, I was already starting to break out in hives internally, externally, and it also affected my breathing. So you're trying to fix one issue, and then another issue pops up.
How did it affect your marriage, though? How did it affect your marriage? Because you said that you wound up driving yourself to the hospital, and then after you discovered that, or they found out that you were more severe than anyone anticipated, what next after that?
Well, I'm sorry, what was the last thing that you said?
I said, what happened after that? Because, you know, like Shirley, that she can talk as well regarding going through an illness and challenges and being married. And with her, in her case, her husband didn't believe that she was as sick as she was, but she had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And not only that, but he felt like, well, he expressed to me that he felt like maybe it was something I did, that God was punishing me. And
wow.
So it made him very angry about it. But
wow.
In listening to your story, it is so true, you know, being so driven that you become, you know, you can physically become ill from all that
Absolutely.
You do. And pressing and pushing yourself to that point, that is something I was having a conversation earlier in a meeting with some of the women in my group. It's about being driven and the passion and the drive that you have, that sometimes you tend to, you know, step back from the necessities of daily life, like enough rest, enough sleep, did you eat on time? You know, all the things that come into play that you don't think about. And being that you were at such a young age, I was just listening to you, you know, describe. You were very young. New family, new husband, school, job, I mean, everything. But you took all the weight on.
I did. You know, and it's a hard lesson to learn. But fortunately, I learned it. And it didn't come without a price in doing so. And, you know, when you were talking about it, it took me back to a time when my daughter was very young. And when I would finish, you know, easy at 12, 14 days in the office and then come home, I would be on the laptop. I was working on the phone on my way home, and then I would get logged into our system from home, and I'm working again. And I recall my daughter, she was a young child at the time. I want to say maybe around 3 or so. And she kept calling me, Mommy, 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 Mommy. And I was like, what, Danielle, what? You know, because I was in the middle of something. She says, I just wanted to say I love you. And I felt lower than an earthworm. So I'm like, what am I doing? You know, I pride myself on being, you know, a phenomenal mother. Now, that doesn't mean I'm a perfect mother, But I prided myself on the type of mother that I was in spite of all of the things I had going on, because I never had dead time, if you will. Even my time in the car was teachable moments. I always used whatever time I had with my children to teach them. We're driving down the street. I don't know who little toddlers knew the difference between commercial and residential property, but mine did. Because I was teaching them at a young age. We weren't talking Google Gaga. I'm like, no, you need to know real words and how to use them. And, you know, all of these things that I was doing and making sure that they had a proper balanced life at the neglect of my own. And being a good parent, part of that equation is taking care of yourself. Now, and that was the one thing that I was failing to do all along, was take care of me so that I could be the best me that in turn will be a better mother to them.
But, you know, we as women do that, though. We are relentless. We keep it moving. We don't think about ourselves. I know that, like, my mother used to go in to the store to say she was picking her up some bras or panties, and then come out with things for me and my siblings. You know,
absolutely.
You know, I remember when, you know, was beginning life again after my divorce, and money was very tight. I didn't have any public assistance, and you know, I would make like a call through Pop, where I would have some neck bones, and then I'd open up a can of string beans and
uh-huh.
throw them in there and have some rice, and it would be just a little bits and pieces of meat with some string beans, but it was a big old plate of rice with the gravy on it to make sure that they had enough
uh-huh.
to eat that would fill their bellies. And I wouldn't eat until they were finished eating. I would eat after I would, you know, when I would have the kitchen cleaned up and stuff and whatever was left, and I would take a little something, and if there was, and if it wasn't that much for me to eat that night, I would take it, what little it was, and take it for lunch the next day. But I always waited, and even I continued those practices. Even in business, you know, working, I wound up in the hospital, even had to have a blood transfusion a few times for working,
wow.
you know, being relentless up and down on the planes and stuff. It wasn't until about 5 years ago that I just, you know, I had been working with Les Brown. I actually started the First Family Motivation. It was Les, Ona, and John Leslie. We started out that way. Then we started out speaker trainings, and I was his primary booking agent, and we started the Platinum Program, and every single day, sometime two states in one day, up and down in the planes, and I would basically eat. Now, it wasn't that I couldn't afford to eat at that point, but I was so busy, I wasn't eating.
Yeah.
And I was, and then my kids were in school, and they were in high school, and they needed certain things because, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with my story, but, you know, being a survivor of domestic
yeah.
violence, I wound up being homeless, and then having to raise my kids, you know, pulled my life back together, got an apartment, and then they started looking at colleges. I told my children whatever school they wanted to go to, they could, because I was going to make sure it happened. So that meant I had to keep working, keep being relentless, because I found myself trying to make up for things and time they lost from when we were homeless and when we were in that domestic violence situation. So I neglected myself and made myself sick. And I continued those practices even when I had money. I would be so busy I'd forget to eat. My head would be hurting.
I totally understand that. Absolutely.
You know. So
you're right. Because as like you said, as women we tend to just, because we're nurturers for one, and we tend to put everyone before us, and we're trying to make all these ends meet. And what I started to do to heal myself, if you will, with the help of the Lord, was I had to do a lot of soul searching myself and to find out what is it that is causing me to act the way that I'm acting and feel this need to be excessively driven, as I would want to call it, and not striking those balances and maintaining that throughout my life. And I take it all the way back to my childhood, as many do. But, you know, my father wasn't present in my life until I was 18. So my mom was that single mother, and it was my grandmother who assisted in helping to raise me. So humble beginnings is a nice way to say poor. And that's how I grew up. I didn't even realize I was poor because I had so much love and I didn't have any of my needs went unmet. They were always met. But nevertheless, not having that father in my life and having the validation that a father would give a daughter made me reach out in other ways to get that and to fill those voids, whether it be through my work or people or whatever the case may be. And I was hell-bent on if I had to force a round peg through a square hole, that's how it was going to get in there some kind of way, because I was going to make this happen. Because the one thing I wouldn't be was a failure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to this day, I still say that. Failure is not an option for me, period. Never has been and never will be. However, I can't be self-sabotaging in my quest to make sure that I don't fail. And my mindset had to change on what constitutes failure. Just because something that I put my heart and my mind to didn't work out the way I wanted it to doesn't constitute me as a failure. I only fail if I don't learn and I don't keep moving forward. And it took a lot of years and soul searching to finally get to that place and that mindset that I can be successful in all facets of my life, but I have to have it prioritized accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I can definitely identify with that. I think that the reason why, well, actually, I know the reason why, that I was relentless in fighting and making sure that I had and that the children had and everything was secure even with my family and thing is because I was told that I would not be able to make it. I was told that life would be over for me because I walked out of the marriage. I was told I would never be nothing. No one would ever know my name. And I was trying to make sure I proved everyone that said I wasn't going to be. I wanted to prove to them I will be and I will survive. So therefore, I did everything I could to make sure that it didn't happen, and it almost became fatal to me. So what was it that caused you to emerge out of the ashes?
I would say two things. One that I've already stated, which was me taking the time to search my soul and find out what are those things that are causing me to make poor choices for my life. And second was finding my way back to my first love, and that's God.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get that relationship back in alignment, because nothing else was going to work out right.
Right.
You know, my thoughts was, you know, God, you weren't there when I needed you, the way I needed you, and how I needed you to be for me. And this went wrong. Now, I haven't been able to share in this period of time all of those myriad of things, but that caused me to separate myself from my first love. And I'm like, well, I'll do it my way. But my way is never going to work
mm-hmm.
by myself. That's just not going to happen. There is a divine order for my life as it is for everyone else's. And
we're always trying to help God out.
Oh, all day, every day. And I'm the first one. I'm the first one going to be right there, just like I was from a little girl. I'm going to tell the teacher how to teach her class. Because she wasn't doing it right. I was that child. I'm going to help everybody else out because I know the best answers. Now, 99.9% of the time, I'm usually right. But on this one, God trumps me all day, every day. I definitely couldn't tell him how to do his job. And he allowed me to go and wallow and do me. And when I got tired of getting my head busted and my heart broken and disappointed, I came right back where I should have been all along. And it was that and searching myself to get me right. You know, sometimes when we're going through, and I can speak for myself, but I believe that it holds true for so many other people, we look externally at where the problems are. And sometimes the problems is not always external. Sometimes it's us. We're the problem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's a bitter pill to swallow, but to thy own self be true. It is so important that you make you a better you, because no, that's the only one you can control. Now, you can have influences all day long in people's lives, but you don't control them. People make their own choices at the end of the day, and the same holds true for Demetria. I had to make me better by fixing things wrong in my life and getting my relationships where they needed to be. That didn't mean that every relationship I had to end in some reconciliation or what have you. It might be the dissolution of one. You know, whatever the case may be, that's what I had to do so that I could get myself back to a healthy place. Now, have I risen completely? No, because I'm a work in progress. And until I'm on the other side of the dirt, then I will always be a work in progress. But I have made some better choices now for my life. And I've learned a lot of lessons along the way. And I'm still learning. I still make mistakes and mess up when I decide to get out of, when I decide to operate in self as opposed to letting God lead me. Because I want that quick fix right away. You know, whatever the case may be, sometimes, you know, we look to other people to numb our pains. And it's very temporary, as opposed to getting delivered from that pain. Or we repress. And all it takes is a reminder to make that come back to the surface because we're not dealing with our issues. You know, things that I'm saying when I say we, I'm the first partaker of that fruit because I was that person. I have been that person. But for me to rise above all of that, I had to look at me first. And one of my outlets has been writing. As you mentioned earlier, you know, my passion is to sing. It's an entertainment period. To sing, to write, to act, all of those things are passionate to me. Those are the things that I would do whether I get paid or not, because that's how much I love them. And I ask and encourage everyone to follow your passion, because it is a wonderful thing to do. But I went back to those things that I loved, and that was my therapy. I sung, and I think everyone should have a song in their heart, and God would minister to me that way. It didn't matter what I just would start singing. And before I knew it, the lyrics of songs that I started to sing started to minister to me, and it lifted my spirit. And then I started to write, and I have now written a whole collection that I'm going to be publishing of my poems. And not even know before I met you, I had already had my title as The Heart of a Woman, because we have so many different things in our heart that need to be expressed. And I was able to use it as my therapy where others may journal to do that. I wrote poetry and spoken word pieces, and I started performing and doing me again. Because I had set me aside for so long, I'm trying to make everything else happen in my world to please everybody but Demetria. And the one thing that Demetria truly loves, she loves to sing. She loves to write. I have such a heart for that it comes naturally.
Okay, so you sing professionally.
Pardon?
You sing professionally.
Yes, I do. People pay me to do that.
Okay. Now,
and I have for many years, and I never stopped singing, but I didn't make that my priority.
Okay. And how can people find that, find any of your music?
Well, I don't have all of my music published. I do have some of my stuff recorded, but they can contact me directly if they want to book me. I usually do live performances at different places, and I write for others as well. Along
so do you
and
do
now,
ghostwriting?
Same thing. I
do
have
not
done ghost. I haven't done ghostwriting. No, I retain my publishing. Right.
Okay.
To date. I have retained it.
Okay.
I'm open to it. I'm not against it, but I just haven't. I like to kind of retain my ownership for my thing. But I'm not against it.
Okay. So what message would you leave to someone that has been where you go, or maybe in the midst of it right now, still trying to claw their way through, find their footing? Because my trauma was going through the domestic violence and winding up being homeless. Your trauma was dealing with illness and losses and then emerging out. What was some of the steps you used to cause that shift?
I won't necessarily go in order of importance, but I will go as the things come to me. But for me, one of the things that I had to do, and I think whether it be domestic violence or a letdown from loved ones or illness or something, is you have to give yourself permission to grieve. There is a period of time that you just got to grieve those things that have caused trauma to you, because sometimes the trauma is so great that it actually alters who you are from that point forward. And we as women have a tendency to compartmentalize these things and not deal with them, and they manifest in other ways. So you do have to allow yourself to grieve and go through those healing steps that you need to take. And anger is one of them, and, you know, hurt and crying and pain, all of this, a myriad of steps that you're going to go through, or emotions, if you will, and stages of that grieving process. And you have to allow yourself that time and space to do that, and don't put a timetable on it. And at the same token, another thing is make sure that you have a good relationship with God and a good support group. And don't be so prideful that you don't lean on others that are there for you, and they're there for you in the right way. They're not just trying to get up in your business, because typically we all have at least one good, genuine friend, at least one. And that's really all you need in your time of need, is at least one. If you're the best thing going on in your group, you're in the wrong group of people.
That's the truth.
Seriously.
So
you can't be the best thing going on. You know, another thing is to focus on something else. So focus on something that you have a love for, because sometimes you don't even love yourself enough. You'd have been so beaten down and emotionally or physically battered at times, or life has just beat you down in such a bad way that you no longer love yourself like you should. But there's someone or something in life that you truly love. And for me, it was my children. Even in my darkest places, where I would have rather woken up in my Savior's face than on earth, and I've gotten that low, it was those beautiful children God blessed me with that kept me going, even when I didn't feel like going.
Hear, hear.
And even my mother, because I have four half-sisters through my father, but I'm the only child to my mom, and I absolutely adore my mother. And I couldn't imagine hurting her and my children by being so selfish. And I do think that taking yourself out is selfish to do something like that. But when you're at a very low place in your life, you know, the enemy's going to come in and start to feed you all these things as to why you should just give up. But as I said before, for me, failure is not an option. And I had to draw from that. And I had to have the Word of God so rooted in me that I had something to draw from. You don't wait to get into a crisis to get into the Word. Because when I was going through my stuff, had I not had that Word in me to draw from, I probably would already be on the other side of the dirt. You got to get those relationships with God right now when you ain't everything ain't going awry. You know, I mentioned to you before about, you know, having a song in your heart, because it does, you don't have to be a great singer to have a song in your heart to help lift your spirits. Journal. For me, I did poetry. So I journaled, you know, through writing my poems and what have you. It is an outlet because you get that stuff out of you. Now, there are some stuff that you might not want the world to know. So burn it. Write it all down. Light a match to it. That's therapy all within itself. For one, you're releasing it out of your system, and by you burning it, that is a symbol or a symbol, for lack of a better term, of release. You're not dealing with that anymore. You got to turn it over to God. You know, and you would be surprised when you do these exercises just how liberating it is and how much of the pressure and the load comes off of your shoulders just by doing these little things. It might sound silly, and, you know, a lot of us think therapy and all of those things they don't look favorable upon those things, but there's a place for that. And one of those things to do is journal. You know, get it out of your system. And you don't have to tell the world your business. Light a match to it and burn it up. Just don't do it in the house so you don't set the house on fire. Another thing I had to do is I had to forgive myself. And that I found to be one of the hard things to do, was to forgive myself. It was a lot easier for me to give everyone else than it was for me to give myself for my poor choices. You know, and to learn from what you did and to face your fears. Because sometimes we won't take that next step because we're so afraid. So what if you fall? Get up. Just get back up. As long as you're on this side of the dirt, then whatever hurts will eventually pass. And you can keep pressing forward. You just got to last. And the only way you can last is you got to keep moving. It's just like a body. A body that's not in motion won't stay mobile. You know, I took a lot of time to soul search and what have you. You can't be a receptacle for everyone's garbage. You know, don't let people keep dumping things on you. You know, hurting people tend to hurt other people. And that's something that we have to be very mindful of when we're going through tough times and we're in a place of brokenness. Because when we're in that place, we're very vulnerable and susceptible to other people hurting us. Or are we self-sabotaging and hurting ourselves and hurting other people? Because it is very true that hurting people hurt people, not with intent. I don't believe it's with intent, but I do know that there is great truth in that.
Mm-hmm. They don't acknowledge.
You know, and at the end of the day, you know, you got to find your way back to your first love. You must. That's just something you just have to do. You know, you got to speak positive. You got to think positive. You can't put a bunch of negativity out there in the atmosphere and think that it's going to yield some positive outcome. It's just not going to happen.
Okay.
You know, and I would say, I mean, I have a litany of things that I can think of all the things that I did. One thing I do want to say is I started to love on me.
Okay.
How did I do that? Now you might have to say,
like,
baby,
what does that look like?
What is that? What does love on me look like for me?
Mm-hmm.
It was doing things that I enjoyed, and I didn't have to have the company of someone else. I could learn to enjoy me by myself. I love going to the spa, so I would have me some spa days, just me. Now my daughter, who likes it to go every place I go, I couldn't tell her all the time I had a spa day. To her, mommy was just going to work or running some errands. But I would have me a phenomenal time with just me. I would call out. I had mental health days. I could be driving to work, and I'm like, you know what? This is a gorgeous day. I'm going to have a mental health day and drive myself to the beach, let my sunroof back, turn my music up as loud as I could, and enjoy myself. And when I came home, I was revived. I was like, yes, I could do this again. I did the same thing at the spa countless of times. Now, everyone can't afford to just up and go to the spa like that. I won't say that I could have afforded it, but I made some sacrifices so that I could take care of me for a change. Maybe you don't get your pedicure that do your own toes that week or something like that. Now, if you can't and you need a great massage, but you just really don't have it like that, there's some furniture stores that got $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 chairs. Take yourself on over there and sit in one of them. Get your little free massage. You got to do what you got to do. Just start to love on yourself. Go out with you. What are the things that you actually enjoy and start doing it? You know that I told you I have a love and a passion to sing. I stopped passing up gigs when people would call me. I started singing again. I enjoy it. I love it. You know, you put a microphone in my hand and now I'm home. That's home for me. I started back acting in plays at the church that I was attending. One of the young ladies, she was a writer there as well. So we did productions, and I just enjoyed doing me again. And that's how you love on you. Your passions or your desires or the things that you enjoy may not be the same as mine, but whatever it is, do that. And what I also didn't do is I didn't stop helping people. And the more I helped other people, not to my demise, but simply helping other people, being who I am and true to me, my issues started to get resolved without my interference because I stopped helping God fix things. I started being a help to somebody else, and he rewarded me by fixing my issues. So that's how you can do things to love on you. That is loving on you too, when you're reaching out to help someone else without looking for something in return. I don't know Absolutely. For anyone else, but I find that extremely rewarding and very uplifting to be able to help someone out of the kindness of my heart, because that's what I wanted to do. I didn't want any glory and any accolades. I just wanted to help. And God blessed
that
me
is excellent.
In doing so.
Well, I've got a few more minutes out of time. How can individuals connect with you to meet you or find out about your music or hear any of your music? How can they do that?
Well, they can contact me directly, and I can get that information to them. My website is not up yet, so in the interim, they can reach me either via email or by
Facebook?
Telephone.
And you have Facebook?
I do. I have Facebook,
okay.
I have LinkedIn, and Twitter. And it is my name for all of those, first and last name. So they can contact me that way
name.
As well.
So
T. Like and Tom. I will. T. Like and Tom, AmeTriA, last name Harris, HARRIS.
Thank you so much. We were out of time, but I want to remind everyone to go to fromthesoulofawoman.com, fromthesoulofawoman.com, and if you have any questions or comments regarding the show, you can email me at soultopics@gmail.com, soultopics@gmail.com, and on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, under Valerie Parker, and you can find Shirley Carter on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn as well. Thank you so much for joining us on another Hot Topics from the Soul. Thank you so much for being our special guest, Tamitra Harris, talking about rising from the ashes.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Good night, and God bless.
Good night.
Good night.